Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, after covering news all over the world and founding a billion-dollar company, I'm here to tell you, well, as much as I possibly can, tell it like it is. So welcome to what we call Direct Impact. It seems these days, to me anyway, like there's every day another group of countries who are forging a coalition to see if they're really is strength in numbers, right? And you know what they're finding? What they're finding is there really is strength in numbers. You see, it used to be that the superpowers had to invite you to be part of one of these groupings. Like, for example, in my part of the world, the OAN, the Organization of American States, you know, which is really controlled by the United States, right? Most would argue still is. Or the Organization of Non-Aligned Nations that ended up being kind of on the aligned side, not the non-aligned side. Today, though, and this is important because this gives us a sense of where we are and where things are heading, there seem to be more, a lot more. There, you know, obviously the big ones, there's the EU, there's also BRICS, there's NAFTA, there's COMESA, which, interestingly enough, brings together all of the countries in Eastern and Southern Africa. That's specific. And then there's the one that we want to focus on today, because this is really the breakout one, right? It's called ASEAN, not Asian, ASEAN, A-S-E-A-N. It's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. And this grouping, by the way, regional countries once again, they include Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and, you know, Vietnam. They have a population of almost 750 million people and a GDP of $3.2 trillion. That's big. The reason that these countries are so important is because together, they're now so powerful, enough to matter, especially economically. In fact, all recent reports seem to show that while our economy here and in the United States, where we are, in our nation's capital, I'm a block from the White House from where I speak to you. And in fact, other Western nations, you know, Europe, for example, economies in the next year, possibly the next year or two, are going to be stagnant, meaning it will actually contract throughout the year. While, and here's the payoff, right? The economies of these ASEAN countries, these ASEAN nations, are going to hit record growth levels, according to many analysts. I mean, talk about a yin and a yang, right? Now, we don't know what's actually going to happen, but that's what a lot of economists are predicting that there's going to be a real big difference. What that gives them, by the way, is essentially a vaulted position, one they're using now to assert themselves and push back against, for example, Western rules and conventions. In fact, it's appearing, and this is, I think, kind of key, ASEAN countries are moving toward an alliance now, not just geographically, because they always have, because they're in that region, but more of a real alliance with China. Why? Well, because what it seems that they're looking for is a very interesting word that really comes into play these days when you look at the global picture. It's called pragmatism.
ASEAN Community was finally launched on 31st December 2015. The aim is for the region to be a politically cohesive, economically integrated, and socially responsible community. Currently, it is proud to be one of the fastest growing consumer markets and biggest economies in the world.
And what do we mean by the word pragmatism when I say that? Well, I guess we have to start by looking at ourselves, right? My country, our country, from where we are now, the U.S., has long been and still is the big dog in the race when it comes to global leadership. There's no question. However, of late, because of economic conditions and the view from many countries that we too often lead with a clenched fist, especially when it comes to the use of our military and our need to sell military weapons and infrastructure, kind of losing that edge. China, on the other hand, is leading with infrastructure. Key, infrastructure. It goes into countries with the aim of building mega infrastructure projects in every country, in every region that it can touch, with these deals with these nations like ASEAN, these regional groupings. In most cases, by the way, that is money that they then lend to those countries. So it's not like they're doing it for free or anything. Don't get me wrong. So far, though, this plan, this thing they're doing, well, it seems to be working. You know what's interesting about all of this? It's interesting that this is happening, this whole thing with ASEAN, despite the fact that the U.S. has been courting ASEAN countries. President Biden himself leading the reception. You might remember this. I mean, do the ASEAN countries respect the U.S.'s vaulted position, as you see them there playing follow the leader as President Biden brings them all out in this ceremony they had at the White House, this reception? Well, of course they do. Of course. Nobody's saying that they don't respect the United States, that they're not going to be working with the United States. This is going to continue. But what they also know is that the U.S. is no longer the only game in town. No longer the only game in town. In fact, the same could be said these days about many of these regional blocs, all the way from the Middle East through Africa and, of course, my backyard, Latin America. Joining us now to talk about this is former foreign minister of Austria. Karin Kneisel is a political analyst who served as Austria's foreign minister from 2017 to 2019. And she's good enough to join us now because she is really smart when it comes to this stuff. So we're so glad that we have her here. Dr. Kneisel, thanks so much for joining us. It's really nice to have you here.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Let's start with ASEAN. I find that grouping fascinating because the more I read about them, the more that I realize they're, pardon my ignorance, perhaps, but one of those regional groupings that I never paid a lot of attention to. But lately, they've been coming up a lot, and they've been becoming very, very important. And they're getting the attention of a lot of countries, including, as you saw in that video, from President Biden. What is it about them that's putting them in this vaulted space, if I can use that term?
Well, as I keep saying, for at least 20 years, pipelines and airlines are moving east. The music is playing in the east, not in the west. And there are many voices who have pointed to the fact that the 21st century is the Asian century. And when you think Asia, you always say China, but China is of course, the giant, but they're the so-called tiger states, as we used to call them actually already back in the late 1980s. Vietnam, an amazing country by itself, amazing society. I had the privilege to teach once upon a time in Ho Chi Minh City, former Saigon, and it was one of my most impressive experiences with young academia because they're just curious, they're eager to learn, they're thirsty in every respect, and this is something that that I'm missing in many Western universities, and it goes from academia to companies to the corporate world. Are you still eager? Are you still thirsty? Are you ready to renounce on something in order to advance? And this is definitely more the case in many societies within ASEAN than within the European Union, for instance.
Do you think that, you mentioned Vietnam, I mean, that's a big, powerful economy right now, 90-some million people and an economy that compares to some of the biggest in the world these days. Do you think a country like Vietnam, throw in Malaysia, throw in all the other countries in the ASEAN regional grouping, do they understand now that their togetherness and then add to that an association with China makes them much more powerful than if, and here's the interesting part of my question, than if they had avoided China, or maybe not avoided them, but not necessarily relied on them so much or allied with them so much and stayed more with the United States? Has that clicked, do you think, in their heads?
Well, This is a topic that has been under debate for quite some time. I mean, we have the catchword of decoupling from China when it comes to the United States, which is also forcing other countries into taking a distance from China, not being too dependent, not being too interconnected, a new form of deglobalization. And for the ASEAN countries, which through their geographic proximity, history, demographic bonds are much more connected to the People's Republic of China than countries more to the West. They are in a quagmire, of course, because decoupling is a no-go for them for many, many reasons. I mean, it starts with Chinese investments, whether it's via the Belt and Road Initiative, it goes to soft power of China via the tourism, the sports industry, you name it, you have it, where there is a deep interconnectedness, interconnection between China and those tiger states. And of course, you also have Japan, which is a kind of rival in that. And you have India. The decoupling process that Washington wants to see is a shadow hanging over the current situation. And for many of those ASEAN states, it's a question where to turn to. But I'm pretty sure that geography, which is always the constant factor of history, will have a decisive role in that.
Doctor, stay where you are. I'm going to come back to you in just a minute. I want to continue the conversation. By the way, I do invite you to check out my podcast. It's called The Rick Sanchez Podcast. Catchy, huh? It's global, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And when we come back, what are the Saudis up to? And what's with their sudden fascination with President Xi? It's like he's Elvis. We'll be right back.
November 22, 2022. Outraged Orthodox Christians confronted Ukrainian security service officers, blocking entrances and exits to Kyiv's oldest monastery. They were looking for alleged Russian spies among the monks.
We имеем дело именно с религиозной войной.
The former reason for the brutal crackdown, one church's parishioners had sung a song about Russia. It's long been reason enough to condemn any Orthodox Christian, attack, imprison, and even kill them.
Наши враги, наши оппоненты прекрасно понимают, что не уничтожив православие, они не уничтожат Россию.
Есть места, которые соединяют землю с небом, а есть места, где соединение идет с адом.
I think Russia in the 21st century has taken several opportunities to try to see if there would be interest in the West to create new boundaries, to create a new relationship. And as you mentioned, time and time and time again, it would get flatly rejected because we have sort of pushed Russia into this corner, ideologically, attitudinally, to say, you're the adversary, we may not be in a formal bipolar ideological Cold War anymore, but we're not going to allow a new relationship to develop with you.
Welcome back. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. So recently, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but there has been a almost a bromance of sorts between Saudi Arabia and China. More specifically, between Prince Mohammed bin Salman and President Xi. Their gatherings, their conversations have been quite public, and it's become very clear that Saudi Arabia wants to continue to do deals with China. They are collaborating on trade, economic, military agreements, I mean, to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, by the way, which for the Saudis, I guess, is not that much money. But in fact, as we peruse some of the images of the meetings that we've seen between these two countries, between these two leaders, these two men, what we see is a lot of pomp and a lot of circumstance, right? A lot of pomp and circumstance. But when President Biden, back when President Biden went to Riyadh, right, not President Xi, but President Biden, the reception was actually kind of dry. It was, in fact, referred to as a no-frills reception. So one can't help but ask, then, this goes against historics, right? What is the signal that the Saudis are trying to send with this? And joining us now to talk about this is Dr. Kneisel, who is the former foreign minister of Austria, knows a lot about this particular topic because she is very keen on the Middle East in particular. So let's talk Saudi Arabia. I am always fascinated by Saudi Arabia and what they do and what they don't do. But I was very fascinated by making this comparison, which is why I wanted to show this video. I'm almost thinking they treated or have been treating President Xi as if he were a U.S. president, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes. Well, everybody of us remembers maybe the pictures back in 2018, was it, when President Trump made his first visit abroad, not to Canada, not to Mexico. No, he went to Saudi Arabia, and it was quite a warm, cordial atmosphere, dancing and swinging and cheering, and it had its results. But you reminded us of the rather cool reception that President Biden received a few months ago, and what happened now this time in terms of a true state visit by President Xi is the following. The Chinese belong, in my assessment, to the very few who still take time for visits. You know, the Westerners have this kind of instant meetings, very short, very concise, and it often doesn't leave space and time to really have a profound conversation and to build something like trust. Now, President Xi came to Saudi Arabia for full 3 days. I think the Biden visit was a few hours, not even a day. When President Xi, this is another story, came, for instance, to Serbia, which is a small southeastern country in Europe, he was there for 5 days. You know, most of European officials talk a lot about the importance of Serbia for the European Union, but they never spend more than an hour in Serbia. So the Chinese really take time for their visits, also when they receive guests, and it's not only about protocol, but it's really about building trust. And this is good old school diplomacy, which can yield its results. And so this 3 day visit was rich in every regard. It was not only about protocol, it was not only about ceremonial decor that also leave its traces in the perception. No, they entered now a genuine strategic partnership, and I know that the word strategic partnership has become inflationary. It's overused, but in that sense, we can really call it a strategic partnership. It's about $30 billion investment. It's about investment in artificial intelligence, high tech, nuclear energy. That also was already on the agenda back in 2016 when Xi came for the first time. And what I would say from my personal assessment is the one thing that really changed the world today a little bit is that President Xi suggested in this China-Arab Trade Forum, which was attended by about 30 heads of state from the Arab world, to use the Shanghai Trade Stock Exchange market for energy agreements and to have the yuan introduced in their energy agreements. All sort of commodities which we use for energy, whether it's oil, gas, lithium, everything is traded in U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
U.S. dollar is commodity trade currency. And there have been changes over the years. I wrote about it 15 years ago. I was always keen into that topic. Will oil be traded one day in via a new basket? Will it be traded maybe even in gold? So
No, this is this is I got to stop you here because this is fascinating what you are what you just said. I mean, it's almost as if I was sitting at the White House right now or at the State Department or maybe more the U.S. Treasury. And I was watching these conversations that have been taking place between Xi and other countries, but more specifically the Saudis. I mean, they're the McDaddies of oil money. I would think these conversations would make me think of two things. SWIFT possibly coming to some kind of roll down or end even, and de-dollarization actually being something that could start to happen more in earnest, despite the fact that everybody talks about it, with these two guys talking about that thing that you just said. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Well, it's a topic that has been around for quite some time. A few months ago, even the Financial Times carried an article on it, so everybody paid attention to it. Ah, even the FT is talking about de-dollarization in a very serious way. But when we break it down to the figures, of course, the figures for the time being still tell us a different story. The dollar covers about 42% of world trade. The yuan, the Chinese currency, is in charge of something like 3.6% of world trade. And I think 35% go to the euro. But things can change very quickly because a currency is built on trust. It's all about trust. Mm. Otherwise, it's colored money. It's colored paper. And so what is the backup of that currency and what is the basis of that trust? And is a currency backed up by a sound potential of economic activity, of commodities, like is the case for the Russian currency, ruble, that is backed up by commodities? And what does this mean for the future financial system? I wrote an article a few months ago in which I claim that the bottom line of my text was you can print money, look at quantitative easing, everything that has been happening ever since the abandoning of the dollar standard in the 70s in the US, but you cannot print energy. And I think some people in the world have understood that. So you mentioned the SWIFT, and which is a very powerful tool. We have seen it with the recent sanctions. So what we are in currently is the power of the financial market, also of the insurance market, not to be forgotten. Because the sanctions couldn't happen the way they happened if there hadn't been also the role of the insurance companies, and most of them have their company seat in London, in Frankfurt, in Switzerland. So it's a Northwestern Hemisphere monopoly, the insurance market, if you want. And we have, on the other hand, a region that has based its wealth on commodities, but wants to go beyond that. And this is the Middle East or West Asia, whatever we want to call it. So let's call it more West Asia because we are turning into a new period. And also the notion of Middle East, as I always claim, it's a very Eurocentric perception because from a London perspective, it was the Middle East. From a German perspective, it was the Near East, the Nahe Osten. And from a very proper geographic perception, it's part of Asia, it's West Asia. And here we have the Asian powerhouse China, and we have the West Asian commodity producers of the Arab Gulf states. So a new chapter has opened over the last three days. And it's also interesting to put that into the larger picture of China and Iran, and Iran and Saudi Arabia, because
but they're enemies. Iran but they are mortal enemies. How in the world is that going to work out? How can China straddle that line?
They do it, and this is the very interesting part about it, because unfortunately, U.S. diplomacy, if I pretty may put it in the inverted comma, was always about either with us or against us. It's either or. But real diplomacy, successful diplomacy, is not either or.
It's inclusive.
Both and.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inclusive. It has to be inclusive. It has to be, if I'm doing a business deal with you, doctor, I would say to you, I want you to hear out my competition and see what they offer you and come back, and I'm going to try and beat that. I'm going to try and make you happier than they can make you happy. And if they make you happier, then, maybe in the future we'll do business. It's not either you do business with me or I'm never going to talk to you again, because it's just like what you mentioned earlier. I happen to be Latino, so I come from Latin America. In our world, if you come to do business with me, you better spend some time with me. You're going to meet my wife and my mother and my family and my kids, and I'm going to meet yours. It's not about just sitting down and wrapping things out. So in that sense, there is almost even a cultural tie to some of the things that you have been telling us. We are out of time, Professor. Doctor, this has been a really important conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. You're a delight to talk to, and you certainly know your field.
Hasta la vista.
Igualmente. Muchas gracias. All right, I want to take this moment now to remind you of our mission here on this show. It's simple, really. What we want to do is kind of de-silo the world. It's kind of like what we were just talking about a moment ago with the good doctor. We've got to stop living in these little boxes that we create for ourselves, because truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.